Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. On today's show, protecting your home and pets. With recent wildfires, we look at how you can be prepared. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. The dozens of wildfires sparked in San Diego County last month is one indication wildfire season is here. Some neighborhoods had to be evacuated, and the total number of wildland fires across the state are up from last year, according to CAL FIRE. This news comes on the eve of the 4th of July holiday, which brings an increased risk of fires from fireworks. Here to talk about what we need to keep in mind to better protect our homes, apartments, as well as loved ones and even pets is Luca Carmignani. He is a wildfire researcher and assistant professor here at San Diego State University. Luca, welcome back to Midday Edition.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
So glad to have you here. So we've been hearing about various brush fires in our region with the arrival of summer. Thankfully, most have been put out quickly and without damage to homes. But can you remind us when fire season is in San Diego?
Yeah, so that's a tricky question because historically, fire season was associated with like the start of the dry summer around August until November, December, when the rains start. But in the last few years and decades, we've actually seen a shift in this fire season, and we're talking more about all year round, especially in Southern California, where we don't have necessarily a high intensity period. You know, we've seen with extended droughts or other climate factors, how these can create big fires or relatively large fires in May, January, even we've seen in LA. And so, yeah, we're talking more about all year round instead of a specific fire season.
All right. Well, I want to talk about the long-term and short-term wildfire prevention measures that we can take. So let's first start with the short-term.
Yeah, short-term, that's something that, you know, any homeowner or resident can, there are some actions that they can take to kind of like mitigate the risk of ignition for their structures. So we can talk more about, in more details about what, you know, you can do at home. But also in the long-term, you know, that requires more like a community approach, more like a neighborhood approach where we talk neighbor to neighbor to plan not only the preparedness, but also in case of evacuation, what could happen. And that, you know, also creates some potential relationship with fire departments, fire safe councils, and so on.
You know, we also hear a lot about the go bag. So tell me, what is the go bag and what goes in it?
Yeah, well, a go bag is essentially something that you will bring with you in case you have to evacuate. So as you can imagine, you want to bring all the necessary stuff, but not too much. So definitely think about all the necessities, water, food, and we're usually talking about, like, you know, supplies for 48 hours. So if you have medicines that you need to take, and, you know, if you have pets, and bring not only food for you, but also for your pets, but also that could be also important documents that you want to bring with you, some memories that you want to make sure that they don't get lost in case of a fire. So that's kind of like the idea. And there are different resources, for example, on the CAL FIRE website or the UCNR FIRE website to get an idea about what to put in that bag.
Great. Well, you know, speaking of pets, what do people need to keep in mind and maybe have on hand in case of an evacuation with those pets?
Yeah, that's very personal, I feel, because every pet, you know, as people might react differently to an emergency situation. So some pets might be scared. So you definitely want to have everything ready in terms of carrier if you need it, food and water. You know, if you have cats, maybe a bag of litter, you know, anything that will make the pets comfortable, that would be very helpful. And yeah, definitely plan it ahead.
Well, you know, for those, you know, who may have outdoor space, you know, like a yard or a deck, what are some quick actions they can take and should think about as wildfire season takes hold?
Well, definitely take a walk outside, look at the perimeter of the house, and do you see any material that could easily ignite? For example, it could be a patch of dry grass, mulch, but also like, you know, a very old chair that you have close to your deck that could easily ignite. So all of those materials, you want to move them away from the house or move them in a place where they will be protected by embers or flames, for example.
So what should people consider for more long-term fire prevention? I mean, earlier you mentioned the need for a community approach.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. So it's very important to understand that the fire issue is not a single home issue, but it's a community issue. So there's only so much we can do to prepare the homes, but we definitely need to work with the neighbors. And for example, there are some programs to retrofit homes, and where they they provide vents or other retrofitting structural components that not only work for one home, but for, 10, 20 homes. And this allows a much higher reduction in risk for an entire community than a single home. So definitely moving in that direction, but also thinking about how to improve those structural components, those vents, those gutters, those roofs. That's something that in the long term has to be done, because that's how we prepared the home for fires.
Yeah, and I want to dig a little bit more into defensible space.
Mm-hmm.
How much defensible space do we need to have?
So it really depends on the house. There are, everyone has different lots, so not everybody has huge backyard. But in general, the first round of defensible space is the first 5 feet around the home. So we want to focus on that area to make sure that there's nothing that could burn, for example, close to a window, under an eave, or, in other vulnerable locations. So definitely removing those is the first aspect to do. But also, if you have larger properties, you can move away from the home up to 30 feet or 100 feet and look, for example, how to space apart the vegetation that you have, not only horizontally, but also vertically to, basically avoid the flame to jump from one plant to another and then eventually reach the home.
And it's not just for, like, vegetation. It's for, like, lawn furniture, too, maybe even potted plants?
Exactly. Anything that could burn, even a trash can, if you have a lot of trash inside, that's something that can easily burn. And unfortunately, there's a lot of cases in wildfires that happen during trash day where everybody had, those trash cans outside, and that can help, spreading the fire. So don't think only about vegetation, but literally anything that could burn.
5 feet, a good space?
It's a good space to start.
Okay.
Yeah.
To start. Got it. Should homeowners consider moving trees and plants that may be up against their home? Well, you kind of touched on that, right?
Yeah, so that's a tricky part, because it's being discussed at a state level currently, like what vegetation is going to be allowed in those first 5 feet. And mature trees shouldn't have any problems as long as you trim the limbs that are, touching the house. And for other vegetation is not clear yet, but I would say definitely if you have a plant underneath a window or close to a vent, those probably will have to be removed. But if you have a, a big succulent 4 feet away from the home, that doesn't have that material, that's probably going to be okay.
Hmm. And you say wildfire prevention is really about balancing priorities and risks, and some homes may have different priorities than others. Talk to us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so it's good to have a quick overview about how homes burn during a fire. We have three main exposures. We have, embers that are, or those burning materials that are flying around and could land on a roof or on a vent. But also we have a radiant heating, for example, if you have a shed or a home that is burning nearby, that could create a lot of heat and maybe melt a vinyl frame of a window. And then the third component is flame contact, where we have a direct path for the fire, for example, along a fence that reaches a structure. So definitely having all of these three exposures happen at the same time. So we need to look at what are the major risks in our home. For example, if we live close to an open landscape, we might want to prioritize the ember exposure, maybe working on those vents, those roofs, and the gutters. If we have in a highly urban area, we want to make sure, for example, not to create a path for the fire by removing an attached fence. So, the priorities might might change depending on where we live and the year of construction of the house, but we need to keep in mind these different exposures when we try to mitigate the risk.
Mm. And as you mentioned, there's efforts at the state level to set some rules for wildfire preparation. What concerns do you have about California's efforts to institute rules on wildfire prevention? I mean, what do you think state leaders need to really keep in mind when it comes to preparation?
California actually has led the legislation on wildfire prevention, for example, in terms of building code. The last big piece of the building code was introduced in 2007, Chapter 7A, which, you know, provided a lot of guidelines for new homes. And the new regulation is going to talk about this new defensible space area, Zone Zero, these first 5 feet, which, you know, previously was included in Zone 1 that goes up to 30 feet. So definitely, these are different aspects of regulations which are mostly going to impact new homes and new construction. So it's something to keep in mind is that even that policy doesn't apply to us, you know, it's still good to prepare our home, our vents, you know, our structure to these fires, even though we're not in a high fire risk area.
Yeah. And yesterday, Governor Newsom urged President Trump to take more action on wildfire preparation during his administration to, quote, make America rake again, unquote. He notes the majority of California forests are on federal land. So I'm wondering if you had any insight into some of the challenges and differences in approach to preventing wildfires from the federal and state levels.
Well, without trying to get into many political details, I would say that prevention has different phases, and it really depends on what you're considering. For example, if you look at conifer forest in Northern California, those are forests that historically had a lot of frequent fires, but for several reasons, these got lost over the last century or over the last few centuries. So we need to, you know, make those forests resilient again, and you know, in some cases, we might need prescribed burning. In other cases, we might need like hand thinning. So it's not one solution fits all. And, you know, in Southern California, for example, we have different challenges where prescribed burning is not really an option. So we need to look at, for example, targeted grazing. So there's not one solution fits all. And it's also important to keep in mind that actually the majority of wildfires that end up being destructive do not start on federal land. They start on private land. So it really requires an effort from all the stakeholders, state, federal government, but also communities, because only one of them is not going to be enough.
Mm. And of course, Friday is 4th of July. It'll be celebrated with barbecue grills. Some people may actually pull out a few fireworks. So what can we do to avoid fire risk?
Yes. So that is hard because fireworks basically act like embers, and there's hot particles, these hot sparks that could land on a patch of dry grass and ignite it. So if you have areas around your home that are at high risk like that, maybe you can water them down and hope that, you know, your neighbors are not going to do crazy things. But in general, yes, there is a higher risk. So keep an eye out for your neighborhood.
Watch out for yourself and everyone else.
Yep.
Okay, so where can people go to find more information on wildfire preparedness?
Well, more information are available on the Ready, Set, Go website from CAL FIRE, or there's also the UCANR Fire Network website, which is part of the cooperative extension. So there are a lot of resources. If you want to have more information about how to harden your home, there is, for example, the IBHS report, that is the Institute of Business and Home Insurance Safety. And there are different resources, I would say, depending on what you're looking at, home hardening, defensible space, or a more overview approach.
Oh, and before we go, you know, I'm wondering, we've been hearing about the impacts of spending cuts on research. How is your work on wildfire research being impacted by that, if at all?
Well, I would say the the best word to describe it is chaos.
Oh my goodness.
I had one of the projects that was put on hold back in January and then eventually was allowed to like continue, luckily. But I know that several projects related to ecology, fire prevention, and so on have been somehow affected by the cuts, and it's not really clear what's going to happen in the future. So we're trying to navigate, you know, the environment to see what alternatives we have and how we can, you know, find additional funding. Luckily, for fires and fire prevention and fire research, the cuts have been less substantial than in other fields. So we're still trying to see what's going to happen in the next few months.
Hopefully there'll be some clarity soon. Also, if you want more information on resources, you can find them on our website at kpbs.org. I've been speaking with San Diego State University Assistant Professor Luca Carmignani. Luca, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me today.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.